This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
A pinch and a punch for the first day of the month, 1st of August today. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
In just a moment, we're going to speak to Emeritus Professor Chris Daniels, presiding member of Green Adelaide, because the aim of Green Adelaide is to give us and to deliver a cooler, greener, wilder and climate-resilient city. Chris is going to explain how that plan intends to achieve it. I'm looking forward to hearing from you on that as well. You can join the conversation. 1300 222 891 is the phone line to speak to Sophie or to have a say about the Green Adelaide plan. And our text line is 0467 922 891. Rebecca is in the Clare Valley. And now you've got some fiddler figs, Rebecca. Hello, good morning.
Good morning to you both. Yes, I had some, I've got two fiddler figs that I've had from my late mother. One was in one was only about 40 centimeters and was in a small pot. Mm-hmm. And the other one was a mature one, and I've repotted it. Mm-hmm. And brought it to the Clare Valley from Paraka.
Yep.
I left the small one, which is one that she struck, out on the deck, and you know, to get some sunshine and to get some rain. And one day I kind of went out there and all the leaves had fallen off.
Yep.
So this morning I went out and had a look at the mature one, which is in an alcove, and it is protected. It's got a roof and it's kind of tucked in because it's on quite a large pot. Mm-hmm. And five leaves have fallen off. And yep. I'm worried that the mature one is going to go the same way as the small one.
Okay, so Clare Valley is very cold and frosty, and these are a subtropical plant, okay? So that's why most people have them as indoor plants or occasionally on a patio, but only, you know, in a patio under arsenite or something like that, where they're in a warmer environment. So I understand that your plant's in a really big pot, but if it's losing leaves over winter, you'd normally go, okay, it's getting too cold. So the one that dropped all its leaves, if you can bring it inside, if you have a beautiful north-facing room in your house and you can bring it inside, even though it's got no leaves on it, you know, that would be the best way to let it come good. Can you tell me, there's no chance that those plants dried out?
Look, I don't possibly, but it would only have been, you know, during this winter where I do tend to water things a lot less.
Yeah.
But so I haven't watered them a great deal. The one that was out on the deck, I didn't water at all because it's been raining.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be outside. Yeah. So it definitely shouldn't be outside. Not for sun either. If you had it outside in summer, it would drop its leaves too. You know,
I only had it out inside in winter just to get a bit of the rain, the rain.
So sometimes we put our indoor plants out in winter, but really it's only for that rain event, and then you take them straight back inside under cover. Now, the one that's in the alcove, what way does that face?
Oh, it's a southern-facing alcove.
Ooh, okay, so it's cold. Have you got a northern-facing alcove?
No, we haven't. And it is, the only thing is, it is a very large. It would be too big to bring inside.
Okay. So the thing is, it won't like the south-facing position. Okay, it's cold, and your hope is to find, I mean, if it's too big to go inside, your hope is to find an area where you can move it for winter, and then maybe it will be okay there in summer. But, you know, south-facing in the Clare Valley, freezing cold, you know, it's not going to be very happy. The best thing you can do for it right now is to use seaweed-based plant tonics. It's a little bit of an afterthought, but they do increase the plant's cold tolerance. And it's actually undercover. It's not
Yes,
It's actually undercover. You could also try, and this is a long shot too, there's a product called Drought Shield, which is an anti-transpirant. In New Zealand, it's sold as Frost Shield. Okay, so it gives plants a bit more tolerance of cold weather. And not that it's getting frost directly on it, but that cold air, particularly on the south side, will be a problem. So you might have to, find a temporary solution now and then see if you can find a place, that gets a bit of northern sun, bit of warmth from paving, something like that for future winters.
Okay,
I
excellent.
wish
Thanks
I
so
had
much.
a magic wand, but I
Thank you very much, Sophie. I'd just like to say that my mum was a huge fan of you too.
Oh,
She
good
was
on
an
her.
impressive gardener, and she thought the world of all you guys doing all the gardening and thought the gardening could save the world.
Yeah, well, she's
Well, it
right.
can.
She's right, Rebecca. And in fact, we're about to pick up on an issue around what's happening in Adelaide with the Green Adelaide's new 5-year regional landscape plan, because we do. We need more green spaces. We certainly have faced a lot of challenges over the last 5 years here in South Australia with our natural environment, which makes what happens in the next 5 years incredibly important. I mean, there's a lot of restoration, conservation and enhancement needed. And I think the view is most gardeners would like to have a cooler, greener, wilder and climate resilient city. So let's invite Emeritus Professor Chris Daniels, presiding member of Green Adelaide, to share with us how that is going to happen with the 5-year regional landscape plan only launched a couple of days ago by Green Adelaide. Good morning, Chris Daniels.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, Sophie. And yes, gardening will save the world. What a great phrase.
It's so true. It is so true. Now, you've just released this 5-year plan. Now, I would have to say that so far the text traffic has said this: Green Adelaide needs to get the Premier on board. He's doing his very best to destroy Adelaide's tree canopy. And Linda from Sandy Creek says, how can we achieve a greener Adelaide when the government is intent on destroying so many mature trees in our Adelaide parklands? So that's what I've had so far, Chris Daniels. So I guess the big question is, what are the challenges to be met and how is this plan going to meet them?
Oh, look, thank you for reading out those text, Deb. And yes, we receive a lot of similar comments around a large number of very specific examples. The ones that have been in the press the most, of course, are the ones in the parklands, but they are by no means the only ones across Adelaide. So Green Adelaide exists as a unit, and a natural resources management board, if you like, focusing on the city and wrestling really with all of the big issues we have that are around putting nature into a city. And there are all sorts of tensions, and they will go on and change, wax and wane in different locations. So what we do is take a big picture view. So we look at the entirety of Adelaide, from Selex Beach to the Gawler River, 17 councils, and look to work in five areas, really, around how we can come up with nature-positive outcomes. So we look to catalyse on-ground action, develop database and evidence, facilitate collaboration, which is probably our most important role, collaborating with state and local governments and a whole range of partners and friends groups and so forth. We do a lot in education and nature stewardship. And we do work with a range of partners in government to influence policy through documents like our urban greening strategy. So for us, it's about scale rather than very specific examples that your texters have raised. And they raise those regularly with the organisations that deal with specific issues.
If we look at the five heads that you're hoping to work under, you've mentioned catalysing on-ground action, and involved in that is environmental projects. You're looking at revegetation and planting, pest and weed control, species reintroductions and seed collection, which are all fantastic. also, we need to develop and maintain data and evidence, because what do we know about the canopy of green across these 17 councils? It looks to me, just by my eyes and having grown up and been here for decades, that the green canopy is shrinking rapidly.
Well, it's a great observation there, Deb. And we actually have been collecting data effectively since 2018, using LIDAR analysis to map the tree canopy across the entirety of the city. And our LIDAR analysis, the ones that we have released, was from 2022. It showed that it was just under 17% tree canopy for the city of Adelaide, and that's well below most of the other major cities in Australia, although they tend to be cold temperate or subtropical cities, so have more trees in the first place.
Yeah. So what's their percentage?
So many of those are up around the 30% mark. That's kind of the target. And for Brisbane and Sydney as subtropicals, I think they're over 30%. But they were heavily forested when they were colonised in the 19th century. So what they've seen is a significant reduction. We were mostly open grassland, open woodland type environments. So didn't have so many big trees in the first place. But what we have done here is start the process of retreeing, and the trees are growing. So we saw a small increase from about 14% to about 17% from 2018 to 2022. And we've just finished collecting the data for 2025-26, and that'll be released soon. And that'll really show whether it is increasing, how far are we away from the 30% target, and also what types of trees we are losing. So, yes, we can be planting lots of trees, and we measure trees up to 3 metres in height, but that's not necessarily the 30-metre river red gums or South Australian blue gums. So we can be losing some types of trees while gaining smaller, bushier ones. So that's the sort of information we need. And then also, how does the different sorts of trees relate to the heat island effect that the city suffers from over the summer?
Sophie knows all about that. She doesn't go anywhere without her little heat measurer. Look, I won't read, as you can imagine, Chris Daniels. There are a stack of people complaining about the parklands and the trees, the significant trees that were felled there. But Maha says, how can developments be approved without even having space for avenue trees, let alone backyard or front yard space for garden? And it is true, all of the new housing developments, you drive past them, there is not a tree to be seen. They're not even planted on the roads.
So that's actually one of our really important focus areas, urban neighbourhoods. So we really focus our work on coast and marine, inland waters and urban neighbourhoods. And the scale of the rapid development of urban neighbourhoods, south and north in particular, and the very small amount of green in backyards and front yards and along streets is an area of concern. So we produce guidelines for developers, and we attempt to influence the legislation to encourage larger parks in those areas and much greater incorporation of the right sorts of plants if we're going to have these medium density developments. This is the challenge that we face, isn't it? That we're under pressure to increase housing and to grow the population. And we tend to do that by having larger houses on smaller blocks, and it's the green that suffers. So we have to influence policy as much as we can, given that there are many, many stakeholders in this space.
It's being echoed a lot. I'll read one more out, but there are a lot of people saying this. It's not only the trees we're losing in Adelaide, it's the gardens being lost to blocks of concrete units, which are adding to global warming and heat. And this person, Sally from Goolwa, hello, Sally, says we need greening ideas for the super developments. A house on top of house happening everywhere, including retirement villages. We need ways to mitigate perhaps the rooftops, putting green on those. And, you know, it is the case. I've even seen the new multi-storey developments are right at street level. They often take down the street trees to facilitate building those as well. So we are getting a load of people complaining about that. So what can be done? Can't we be incorporating trees into developments, and shouldn't we? We know the health aspects of it.
We absolutely should, could, and really good developments actually do that. We produce a lot of guides to make that really simple and easy. And we certainly need to keep the voice up. So it's great, actually, to hear the comments from your listeners and the fact that they're sharing them in a wide number of sort of media outlets is great, because that's the pressure that governments, state governments, local governments, and developers will listen to. You know, buyer has power. We're finally seeing a little bit of a move away from black roofs, for example, into now light grey or even white roofs. 10 years ago, there would never have been a house built with one of those on it. So change is possible, and it is by recognising how incredibly important green space in your space is. And I think we're seeing some interesting shifts with local government now moving towards verge, guerrilla gardening of verges, which was a no-no 5 or 10 years ago, and now many councils actively encourage it. Try and make the most of the space that we have. Yeah, look, I absolutely hear the texts, and I get a lot of them, and that enables us to raise these issues in all of the appropriate forums where these can be discussed.
I'm not going to read them, but honestly, there are a lot coming through. Julie in Prospect says 17% is absolutely terrible. Where is the urgent push by this state government to enact the ideas of Green Adelaide across the state, considering they called a climate emergency? Where are the 3 replacement trees for the golf course destruction going? It's peak planting time. Maha is 100% right. New developments are terrible heat bowls and slums of the future. So, you know, we do need to have an eye on the future, and the future is now, unfortunately, when it comes to climate change. I know the other elements of the plan include facilitating collaboration between stakeholders, which obviously is important, isn't it? Everyone's got to be on the same page.
Yes, and they all have competing interests, as yeah, I'm absolutely certain all of the texters would be well aware that there are a whole range of other issues and state and local government priorities that appear to conflict. We try to work on a phrase that's really around nature positive, and actually developing slightly more complex, or sometimes very much more complex, answers. So, yes, it is important to replace trees when they are removed, but it's also important to create ecosystems. So, you know, where's the water? Where are the understory? Are they the right trees that provide food and habitat for birds and for insects? So it's not just 3 saplings. It's how do you actually enhance the nature in a particular area? You also highlighted roofs and walls. Green roofs, green walls are incredibly important. So we do biodiversity-sensitive urban design and water-sensitive urban design, which are designed to improve nature generally. So I really always get a bit nervous about just 3 saplings for 1 tree. And, you know, we know 2 of the saplings would die anyway. So how do we actually put in a better nature? And that's kind of what we do. We provide that guidance towards better nature positive outcomes, and at scale too. So we need to think about all of the inner city, about the north, about the coast, about the Hills Face Zone, and about the south. Each of those areas have their own complex and different issues. So how can we respond to those at scale? Yeah. And that's the aim of the plan.
Chris, how can people get hold of the plan and have a look at it? It is online at Green Adelaide.
Yeah. Yes, that's the best way to do it. Go to the Green Adelaide website and just download it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually really, really valuable, because you get an idea about how Green Adelaide works at scale across the city. Now, we have 17 councils, and we have a huge range of issues, and your wonderful listeners have highlighted some that are very specific and some that are much more sort of general and larger in scope. So the plan really attempts to address the latter, the larger scope ones, over time, and then where appropriate, we'll work with individual issues.
Yeah. And it's important to have a look at it if you are living in Adelaide. So do go to the Green Adelaide website, and there's a lot of important information there and assistive information for gardeners as well, isn't there, Chris?
Yes, that's right. It's actually about empowering local people as well. So we do a lot of our work with friends of groups, whether it be friends of a park, sometimes even a street or a local area. We have grassroots grants which support individuals or small groups or church groups or sports groups who want to do their bit in their space. And that actually goes to one of the text that you just read out there, Deb, about, you know, how do we and what do we do in our own space. About 70% of our accessible space is our own space. So really, the more people do in their own area, the more likely we are to get as close to that 30% as possible. You know, and people should be, when they're buying new houses, asking, you know, where are the trees? Where are the bushes? Where's the nature here? And that puts pressure on developers to include that in their plans.
Yeah, no, good advice. Now, Sophie, your garden this year at the Royal Adelaide Show is Grow, All Gardens Great and Small. And the whole point you are is showing that everything can make a difference, just as Chris has just said.
Absolutely. So not only will you get to see a backyard, but you'll see a courtyard and a balcony. So basically, as Chris said, wherever we are, we have to garden, we have to plant. And it is very hard not to be cynical when we, you know, I'm patron of the Butterfly Conservation Society,
yep.
Adelaide's checkered copper butterfly, a population that we now hold a festival about is under threat with extensions to the MotoGP track. So, you know, obviously we're passionate about saving what we can, but if everyone does something in their own backyard, literally, balcony, whatever it is, we can make a difference.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying that as well. And Mark from Door Park says, we need to think of ourselves as landscape ecologists, not just gardeners per se, to maximise the rewards for our local biodiversity. As the top species on this planet, we must be stewards of the planet and the landscape. Think global, act local, which is very much on point with what you were just saying, Chris.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mark has absolutely hit the nail on the head. You think about nature, and nature is the really important thing here at a larger scale. But it's often by incorporating little bits all stacked up together. So exactly as Sophie was saying, if our garden links with my neighbours and then our suburb links to the next suburb, you then wind up with wonderful habitat that we really desperately need. So everybody can do a bit in their own space, and there's lots of different types of nature, as Sophie was saying, and Sophie will be showing at the show. And again, you can find how-to guides on Green Adelaide's website about your type of space, your road verge, your median strip, whatever is the space that you can use.
Yeah. All right, Chris. Well, look, Cam, as always, thanks very much for joining us and telling us about this 5-year regional landscape plan. We always appreciate your time. Thank you.
Pleasure, Deb. Thank you, Sophie. Speak again soon.
Thank you, Emeritus Professor Chris Daniels, presiding member of Green Adelaide. Go to the website, have a look. Thank you for your many texts on this point. I won't read them all out. Many of them are, of course, talking about needing to protect what we've got before we think about even growing what is needed in the future. Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson with you on Talkback Gardening. The number is 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We've had lots of chilly starts for the week and some beautiful, clear, sunny days. Heather says, very crisp here in Encounter Bay. I'm staying under the doona until September. I can understand that, Chris. And Sarah joins us from Glenelg North. Now, you have got some root knot nematodes, Sarah. Is that right?
Yeah, good morning, Deb. Hi, Sophie. I have. I recently pulled out a tomato plant which was going great guns through the winter, but it was riddled with root knot nematodes. So I'm really keen to hear what Sophie might do to eliminate or reduce their numbers in the soil.
Okay, can you tell me what your soil is like, Sarah?
It's pretty
sandy?
Healthy, I think.
Yep.
It's in a wicking bed and at a community garden, so it regularly gets the compost, which we do ourselves. It's very much free draining.
Okay. So it's quite sandy.
I've never measured its composition.
It's quite sandy.
it's just got lots of air through it, I suppose, from the compost and the different size bits of soil.
The reason I was asking is nematodes can often be more of a problem in sandier soil, but ultimately the key is crop rotation. So that's why it's suggested that you don't put tomatoes back in the same spot for 3 years, three seasons, or any member of their family. The other thing you can do where you know there's been nematodes is plant a fumigant crop, so a mustard cover crop. And you'll get packets of these from places like Diggers or something like that, and you plant that, and that will sort of fumigate through the soil. And ultimately, you put more compost in there, and healthy soil, the microbes in healthy soil, will actually wipe out nematodes. Now, in the old days, not old days, sounds like I'm not ancient, but, you know, the traditional remedy for nematodes was to do something like molasses, right? And you would water molasses on the soil and, you know, people would go, oh, that's hokey stuff. Well, now we understand what that's doing. The sugars in the molasses feed the good bugs in the soil. The good bugs build up in numbers and wipe out the bad bugs like nematodes. Right. So you can now buy prebiotics for your soil, which are basically brewed in molasses. So, you know, it's really a multiple pronged approach. Step one is to do crop rotation. If you can, step two is to put lots of organic matter in there. Step three is to try and do a fumigant crop where you know there's been nematodes. And then ultimately, you know, the more good stuff you put on to encourage soil life, the soil will balance itself out naturally.
Ah, that sounds great. Thanks. Yeah, Sophie,
very doable, but, you know, avoid planting tomatoes there for the next couple of seasons.
Will do. All right.
All the best, Sarah.
Bye.
Thanks, Sarah, very much. I don't know if you can deal with this question in the time that we have, Sophie, but Kerry at Redwood Park would like, is it a red cottonwood prune? Some advice on that, Kerry?
Yes, thank you. Thanks both.
Sure.
I planted it 12 months ago, so it's that street tree that's got the lovely yellow flowers.
Yep, absolutely.
I want to make it bushy, so Google said spring, but it's absolutely going winter now in terms of new growth. So do I start shaping now or do I need to wait another month or so?
Okay, so bear in mind, this is a street tree, you said?
In
your garden?
I personally got it in my garden, yes.
Oh, okay. So they are subtropical, but they're remarkably hardy. If it's putting new growth on right now, I would be nipping it now, okay, to get it to bush out.
Perfect.
Because you're only taking the tips out, and everywhere you do that, it will respond with multiple shoots and you'll get a bushier plant. And obviously, if it's ready to move now, you might as well go with it. But I would also say give it a good feed. You know, if you're, you know, slow-release organic fertilizer, we put it on in spring, but really we want it to be available to the plant about a month before. So if you put that on now, over the next month as it breaks down and becomes available to the plant, that plant will use it.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Easy. All the best, Kerry.
Wow, well done. Thank you, Kerry.
Brevity.
No, you're amazing, Sophie, to give out all of that information in such a short space of time. Hope it goes well for you, Kerry. Thank you to Sophie. Such expertise and wonderful laughter, thawing out a cold morning and bringing joy and enthusiasm, says a listener, which is lovely. And Trevor says, remaking a difference. When I conduct tours with students at the Barossa Bush Gardens, my aim is to help students make a difference by building their curiosity with regard to plants and creatures and also First Nations use of plants for food, ceremony and medicine. Always reassuring when students ask relevant questions. Trevor, you do great work. Thank you very much for that. We will take more of your calls very shortly on 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening on this Saturday, the 1st of August. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
It's great to be with you on this lovely, clear winter's day, a great day to get into the garden. If you would like some help from Sophie, please call in on 1300 222 891. If you've got a comment to make, the text line is 0467 922 891. I have a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away as usual this morning, so stay tuned for that as well, and you'll need the numbers also for that. Let's hop straight into our calls now. Now, Rosalind has called from Glenelg with a compost question. Welcome, Rosalind.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, Sophie. How are you both going?
Great,
really
thank
good.
You.
Yeah,
excellent. Sophie, I've had Getty bins for decades. Never actually managed to do much with them, but I do have a. I've checked on one bin that's been sitting there for a couple of years. For a number of reasons, and it's three quarters full of what looks like dirt to me. It doesn't look like that lovely, rich, loamy stuff that you know, I see on Gardening Australia, but it certainly looks like it's broken down. There's a couple of white streaks in it, but not very much, and I really don't know what to do with it. I just want to make sure that it's safe. It's actually between my apple trees. And so I, you know, like, can I spread it around there? Can I put it on my veggies or,
absolutely.
You know, I just want to make sure that it's safe basically.
Yeah. So, you know, ultimately what goes into it comes out. So as long as everything that went into it was organic, and not, you know, it was safe, that's going to be fine. So if you take the lid off and it's sort of dirt-like, it means it's broken down completely. You know, if it's not been getting water in there because it's been just breaking down, it's probably gone a bit dry. And so you can certainly use that around. I mean, if you wanted to and you had a worm farm as well, you could even charge that material with some worm juice or something like that, because if it's dry, you know, there's probably it's got the structure of compost and organic matter, which is a great sponge for your garden, but it may not have the life that we're wanting in compost. So if you had a bit of, you know, worm juice, you could add that to it to charge it. But otherwise, I would just be, you know, putting a lovely layer around. You know, you can put a centimetre on your veggie beds, and, you know, you could put it around your trees, anything like that. It is certainly safe to use, even if it looks dry and crumbly. You know, it's a bit like we always compare ourselves. We often compare in gardening. We often compare, all their compost looks better than mine. So, and you know, comparison is the heart of discontent. So ultimately, if you know all that good stuff went into it, it's still going to have benefit in the garden. Ultimately, compost turns your soil into a sponge. And, you know, we're going to hear from Darren Ray about, you know, potentially, excuse me, caught my breath, a potentially harsh season coming up. So putting compost on your soil and letting the worms work it through, or incorporating it yourself through, is turning your soil into a sponge, and that means when you do apply water to it, the water is held in the soil.
Excellent. That's really great.
All
I
the
appreciate
best.
That. Can I just comment very quickly on the tree canopy? Really appreciated listening to Chris Daniels, and we have a property that's been organic for 30 years, and we have, you know, plenty of good sized trees, not too big, you know, seizures, eucalyptus seizures and melaleucas and that sort of stuff. And all our neighbours, both blocks on either side of us, have been subdivided, and all they do is complain about our trees. So I feel like we've lost not just the trees from the subdivision, but also our community. And that really is very difficult.
That's so sad, Rosalind. I know that the view from my backyard used to be green treetops, and as the houses have fallen, now all I can see is rooftops.
Yeah, it's really bad, and dark houses with dark roofs no solar panels. You know, I don't know what it's going to be like for them this summer. But, you know, I'm glad that we've got our trees anyway. But, yeah, the loss of community is the loss of trees. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for that advice.
Thanks, Rosalind, for the call. Appreciate that. Just on the text line, ice still in the trees in Belhanna at 9 a.m. And we're not just talking ice. We're talking icicles. literally hanging from the tree. They look
in
incredible.
The tree.
Yeah, you on. Oh, we'll have to get this photo up for you to see, Sophie. It's quite incredible. And thank you to Chris and Daryl in the Eden Hills who have sent a picture saying, our garden has a resident kangaroo, kookaburras, and now a hare, awaiting the arrival of an echidna, which would be very special. Thank you very much for that. Now, this is Beck. Is this our Beck from Victor Harbour? Hello.
Oh, I can see the azalea. Oh,
yeah. Beck, hello. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, oh. I am.
Oh, lovely to have you on the airwaves. How are you going?
How good. I love listening. Debs is my favourite Saturday morning with Sophie. Oh. It's my favourite morning of the week. Now, lovely ladies, I've got this azalea. I bought it from the Green Big Garden Store about 5 years ago because it was out on the throwout tray and it was out for about $3. And I thought, oh, I'll bring it home. And it's always been deep green, lots of white buds and everything else like that. And I know that some plants have a certain life, like we all do in this world, but this time it's just gone very yellow and very brown in the leaves. You can see that. I've got a few buds there. The boyfriend, Alan from Manham, he likes to put go-go juice on everything. He's a go-go juice man.
Yep.
And he wants to put more go-go juice on it because he'll think that that's what will get it going. It gets, as far as water, it gets three what I call old kettles because I keep the old kettles for the pots and I water them each week. The roses are going great with the same amount of water, but the azalea is undercover on the porch.
Yep.
But I just don't know.
Okay, so I'm looking at this plant and there's two things going on. One is it's dried out. Now, can I tell you where azaleas come from or where they grow beautifully is, say, in places like Japan where it rains all summer, okay?
Okay.
So they don't like our dry heat and so that means that three kettles a week is not enough. It needs to be watered daily, okay, in the warmer weather and even in winter, this is sitting on paving. So, it's going to dry it up. If you had a shade house area where there was more humidity around, that could be fantastic. So that's why you've got some brown leaves and it's sort of legged out a bit. The reason you've got yellow leaves is something different again. That is because azaleas need acid soil. So you may well have potted it in acid soil, but every time you water with mains water, it makes it less acidic and more alkaline. So you need to get a camellia azalea mix and you can get an organic one and you simply put it on, you know, every 3 months or something like that, and that will keep it, keep the soil acidic. The go-go juice that your boyfriend's been using won't hurt because that's all about soil health, but ultimately it needs acid, it needs to be given acid fertilizer regularly to keep it happy and pick up the watering. And if you have rainwater... Rainwater would be amazing, but if you don't, just make sure you keep on top of that fertiliser for acid plants.
Oh, thank you, Sophie. Thank you, Debs. And my rose bush in the front's gone yellow like that as well, but that's in the ground, so I'll have to make sure that gets more water and go-go.
Well, I mean, roses at this time of year are probably going to drop their leaves, so I wouldn't be too concerned. If the new leaves that come on are yellow, then, you need to give it a good feed. But, you could get a specific rose fertiliser, but if you've only got one rose, the fertiliser you get for your azaleas will work on your rose.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Easy.
thank you, lovely ladies. Have a lovely weekend. And I always love my Saturday mornings with Deb and Sophie and your background team. They're beautiful girls behind the scenes.
Emma is amazing. Beck, we love you too and you are a lovely lady and thanks so much for being part of the Saturday morning family, which I greatly love coming in here, one of my happy places on earth. Sally is in Burnside. Sally, you've got a camellia bush. What's happened to it?
It was cut down while it was in flower. Would that be all right?
How much is it being cut off?
A lot.
So has it still got leaves below where it was pruned?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fine. It's just disappointing you didn't get to see those beautiful flowers. So, yes, it won't hurt the plant, but obviously you don't get to enjoy the flowers. I could imagine that that could be a bit disappointing.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Sally. All the best,
Sally. Yeah, lovely to hear from you. It's that time of the morning on Talkback Gardening where I've got a couple of ABC magazines to give away. If you would like to win one by text, we need your full name and postal address and text to 0467922891. If you would like to win by phone, call Emma on 1300 222 891. We want your calls too for Talkback Gardening. If you've got a question to ask Sophie, you'll get straight through on 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It certainly is. Mel is in Mildura. Mel, lovely to have you calling in. You've got a passion fruit vine and it needs a bit of help. Hello.
Good morning.
How can we help you, Mel?
I spoke to you some earlier about the, is it a black gold that you recommended?
A black.
It's not the Ned Kelly or the.
Oh, okay. Yes, it's the seedling one. Yeah, yeah. Yep,
yes, yes. And absolutely. I managed to source a few in Madam. And I have sent through some photos, which probably don't get to you, but there's an archway in front of a big wicking bed. And it put on some beautiful growth. Mm-hmm. And then the first frost came that I didn't see. And the shebang, it got. Bit affected. Mm-hmm. And I've been covering it with a sheet nicely. Mm-hmm. But I understand that the new growth will be tender, but with the passion fruit just gets kind of smashed every year in Mildura with frost.
Okay, so how can you tell me how cold your frost goes? Do you know?
Well, the weather says 2, but we have ice on the cars.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. So ideally, passion fruit in a frosty area are best where they get a bit of radiant heat. So let's say it was growing up against a water tank, right? The water tank doesn't actually get as cold, a fence, a brick wall, something like that. So where I am, you know, we only get mild frost, -2.5 is mild. And so I'm going to choose a position against a stone building or somewhere where it gets a better microclimate. As the plant gets higher, the frost damage isn't as bad. But let's say, I know in Mildura it's more or less flat, but let's say you're in the bottom of a valley, the frost will get to the bottom of the valley.
So
if you envisage frost like invisible lava, it will flow to the lowest point. So if you can, where it's over the arch, it should be better. Now, there's a couple of things you can do to make your plant more frost resistant. You can't do them now, it's too late, but as we're leading up to frost periods next time, two things I'd be doing. One is to use a seaweed-based plant tonic. Now, you have to start that about a month before you expect your first frost. What it does is it increases the sugar in the leaves, so therefore the freezing point of the water in the leaves changes. So that works really well. And then there is a spray. Now, this is a commercial product. We're not spraying the fruit, we're spraying the foliage because you don't use it on food-producing plants, but you can use it on their foliage. So, you know, and basically it will also give you a couple of degrees. So between the seaweed-based plant tonic and a frost protectant, you know, you've probably got the plant covered. I wouldn't, you know, it's too hard to go out at night and cover things and you just got to miss one night.
I know, which is exactly what happens.
It's crazy. And you can buy this thing. So rather than use a sheet, there is a better product called Frost Cloth. And I'm suggesting a few things you buy, but you'll use this, you know. So it comes as a roll. It's very cheap and it's like a underlay material, you know, and theoretically you don't want it sitting right on your plant, but if you threw it over the arch, it would work better probably than a sheet. But ultimately I would be trying to help the plant from within and look at whether that position is the best position or whether there's another position that's got more radiant heat.
Beautiful. My first two attempts were up against a fence, which is spot on what you're saying, but they were the Nellie Kelly.
Nellie Kelly, and they're harder. So
died. No, just bite everything.
So I would just be saying, okay, well, we'll leave that one there, but maybe we put a second one in. And, you know, it's way too cold to be planting now. You wouldn't want to be planting till about October. But now is the time to be working on the soil. So if you can get some manure and everything in so that when you plant in October, it will power away.
Okay, super. That is wonderful. The spray that you're talking about, the foliar spray, is that actually to enhance the structure of the cells? Or is it a...
It's actually called an anti-transpirant spray, and it's called Drought Shield in Australia. But if you went to New Zealand, they don't sell Drought Shield because they don't have drought. They call it Frost Shield. So it's actually, it is synthetic. It's not an organic product. So using the seaweed-based plant tonics will work from within. But this is a purely a topical thing, and it's, you know, if you've got young plants and we're going into an extreme summer, and you worry that they're not going to be tough enough, that's the sort of product that can help you.
Beautiful. Okay, thank you so much. That's wonderful.
Easy done. Best. Thanks very much, Mel. Enjoy beautiful but chilly Mildura. Congratulations to our magazine winners, Joan in East Adelaide and Vicky in Neildotti. Tessa is in Gulfview Heights.
Good morning. I've just got a question. I've got a Jack pumpkin that was growing through summer, and it's and there's a couple vines there, and they're still growing well and still putting pumpkins on. So I'm just wondering what I do with the, obviously, the pumpkins that are mature. Do I, like, do I try and kill the vine? Like, do I pull out the vine so that it can then die and harvest the pumpkins, or should I just harvest the ones that are mature?
I would just harvest the ones that are mature. You've obviously got a protected spot and a little bit of a microclimate. You know, so for some reason they haven't clocked that it's winter. It's freezing cold. So, you know, basically if the stem of the pumpkin has gone brown, right, then you can cut that and then you sort of let them harden off. You may well find that some pumpkins, if they're picked a bit immature, they may not have the intensity of flavour, or they may even be a bit green, but they're still edible. So I would be letting them go on the vine as long as you can where you are, because obviously, you know, you're not in a frosty area or the plant would have died ages ago. So I would, you know, if the big ones are ready to harvest, and then leave the little ones as long as you can.
Okay. Yeah. Wonderful.
All the best, Tessa. Love a good pumpkin question.
Well, with the big pumpkin festival happening today, thank you, Tessa. Lovely to hear from you. Just on the text line, Sophie, a couple of things just to add to the conversation that we've had this morning. Trudy from Nairn says, we live on an 800 square metre block. We have almost 25 trees and still room for lots of gardens. So that's someone who is very dedicated indeed to making sure that they're contributing environmentally speaking. Susan in Seacliff says, it's my concern re the urgency to build and provide more housing that we need to plan correctly to allow for the planting of trees and green around any structure, as well as allowing for some permeable surfaces to allow for groundwater penetration for when it does finally rain. And that's important because, of course, that stormwater goes straight into the Gulf here in the city of Adelaide. And coming back to the whole health impacts of being in a garden. Gardens are therapeutic and will hopefully save the world, but most importantly for me, they bring memories of my mum closer to me every day when I can see the flowers and plants that she loved. And that's the thing, gardens are emotional connections as well as everything that they do for our mental and physical health, Sophie.
Absolutely. And, you know, just if you're feeling stressed and you get the opportunity to, you know, go out in your garden, just even to sit there, you know, even if you don't do anything, and it doesn't have to be your garden, it can be a park, it can be a public green space, I guarantee you will feel better after watching the birds, bees, butterflies, listening to song. You know, it transforms you. And, we do have to be proactive to protect what we have as well as adding more to it.
Just a few questions for you finally on the text line, Sophie, if we can just rip through them. Peter in Otway says, best time of year to prune rosemary and lavender, please.
Okay, it depends what sort of lavender. Great question. If it's French lavender, it's flowering beautifully at the moment. So when it finishes flowering as we go into spring, if it's English lavender, it flowers in spring. So it probably should have been pruned, you know, back in autumn so that you've got new growth ready for flowering this spring. And rosemary, you know, ultimately rosemary flowers autumn, winter and early spring. So you prune after flowering. That's a general rule of thumb. However, if it's got too big and it's bothering you now, you can prune it.
Okay. Can ginger be successfully grown in a greenhouse in South Australia?
Absolutely. And actually, the people that I know that are growing ginger well are often doing it in styrofoam boxes. And so I used to grow ginger and turmeric and galangal in a little greenhouse I had in my previous property, despite the fact it was Mount Barker and it got down to -5. So ginger didn't necessarily like my salty water, I'll tell you, but it is possible to grow it. And so if you've got a little area that's covered with alcinite, you know, polycarb, you know, or an actual little glass house. Absolutely.
Okay, well, I reckon we will leave it there because it's been a very busy talkback gardening this morning. I'd like to say a huge thank you to everybody that sent through texts when we're having a chat with Emeritus Professor Chris Daniels. There are so many that I can't read them out, but thank you very much for taking the time to do that. And we do read them, even if we don't read them out. Sophie, you've got a big day ahead.
I do. If you do get a chance, check out my Facebook page. You'll see pictures of pumpkins decorating the stage, and they are looking beautiful. So we're having a lot of fun with people that have come bought tickets to this booked out event, and also with our local community.
Oh, that's lovely. We'll have a great day, and pumpkins rule. Absolutely love it.
Absolutely. And happy gardening to all our listeners. This beautiful day to get out there. You might have to wait till the hands defrost, but then you'll be able to enjoy some sunshine.